G'day, I'm Tom Uren, author of the Seriously Risky Business policy-focused newsletter, and today I'm talking to the Gruck about secrecy, or OPSEC, as it comes to cyber operations. For the US and Western intelligence services, OPSEC is paramount, but for Chinese APTs, doesn't seem particularly important. Why do different states treat OPSEC differently? I started by asking the Gruck, what is it that makes OPSEC important? It seems self-evident, but perhaps cyber operations are different from traditional espionage and even SIGINT operations. Here's the Gruck.
It seems really obvious, you know, as you said, like if you're doing something secret, then obviously you want it to be secret. But what is the point of the secrecy? Like it's kept secret to protect something, like for some reason. So with espionage or even SIGINT collection of the traditional sort, that's usually very obvious because the secrecy of the access that you're protecting is, for example, with human, it's a person. You know, like if that gets revealed, then someone goes to jail or they get killed. When that secrecy is broken, the repercussions are, they're huge, and they are to an individual. They're, someone suffers. So sort of self-evident there. And with more traditional SIGINT, the investment in those technologies and those capabilities, that's multiple years, right? Like if you figured out a way of listening to a particular radio that's been developed by the opposition, it's not going to get phased out in 3 months or 12 months. Like that's a multi-year capability that you want to keep going. So preserving that access makes sense. Cyber is a little bit different, of course, right? Like if you have access to a Kremlin computer that's given you really great stuff, if you decide to burn that access, if you reveal the exploits that you used to get in and they find it in their logs, or you reveal secrets that you got from that server, the consequence is just loss of access. It's not loss of a person. It's not loss of a multi-year development effort. But, you know, it's not like a huge radar installation.
Yeah. I describe both of those as protection of capability. Yeah. I mean, even in the case of the human asset, if they get killed, this very cold way to look at it is, well, we've lost the capability. I think there's kind of a moral dimension there that you don't have in SIGINT.
Right.
I often think of OPSEC as a tactical versus strategic trade-off, in that you could operate a lot faster if you didn't care about OPSEC, but likely you're trading off how long you can keep an access. Mm-hmm. One story that I came across is that for the longest time, the Russians during the Cold War had inserted devices into the typewriters in the US embassy in Moscow, and they got all sorts of wonderful intelligence off this access, where they had typewriters that were built with a special radio transmitter and they were listening for the exact keystrokes. And the State Department, when they found out, subsequently did a review, and they couldn't find a single example where the intelligence that they think the Russians got was used to change a decision. And in that case, it looks like the Russians realized that this access was so important, we couldn't tip our hand by actually using the intelligence in any obvious way. So that's, to me, a fantastic example of how something can be so important that you almost can't use it.
Yeah, like that's sort of part of the dilemma of intelligence, of course, is that because it is secret, if you use it, you lose it. Frequently, that's the case. So it becomes sort of, when do you use it? Now, an excellent example of using intelligence was, of course, in January and February of this year, when the US was just burning Russian intelligence stuff so rapidly, and to strategic effect. You know, like it was a tactical release. Like they'd say, like, okay, so tomorrow what the Russians are going to do is this. You know, and they were just burning it immediately. And you know that they were losing access in the process, but what they achieved was, I think, worse. So strategically, I think one of the things that came out of that was the U.S. intelligence agencies had, they'd really suffered loss of face from, you know, intelligence is that thing where, like, you can't celebrate, victories cannot be celebrated and failures cannot be explained.
Yep.
Right. So you only ever see it when things go wrong. And here is an opportunity for them to show things going right. And they really, they got some credibility back in terms of saying, you know, intelligence believes this to be the case.
Yeah.
You know, now that's worth taking seriously. And I think that was very smart.
Yeah, yeah. It was always framed in the media as them using intelligence to kind of cut off Russian options by making it clear what would happen beforehand. But the details were so high level. I often wondered if they were actually burning sources or just putting them at risk and in terms of the capability. But I agree with you. That was a very positive example.
Yeah. So I think that that's sort of like one of the things. But just to like bounce back on what is the point of secrecy in the first place? Like, what is the point of having stealth cyber operations? You know, with espionage, as we've been talking about, one of the points is to maintain that access so that you can continue to use it. And that's a thing that for espionage, that's a sort of, that's in the bones, that's the DNA of espionage. Mm-hmm. It's always this, you know, you keep your access because what you get today might not match up to like the gold you're going to get tomorrow. Or, you know, if you use it now, you won't be able to.
Yeah, I think it also is a combination of access you maintain, but also the moral dimension of keeping your mm-hmm. assets alive. Plus, that's also reinforced by if you keep on getting them killed, you'll never have more agents as well. So there's sort of a triple threat there. That
was where I was going. Is that if you recruit people and you get them killed, you stop recruiting people. Right?
That's like, bad advertising.
Yeah. You know, everyone knows about us. You know, we're the guys that get your countrymen killed within 6 months. So how would you like a job?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it makes sense. But with cyber, a lot of that gets lost. Part of it is the access. You lose a lot of those dimensions. You can still get access again. Like you're bound to find another bug, or you're going to be able to compromise someone else's password, probably. Like, it's not a bad assumption to make, as opposed to like, well, we'll just find someone else to recruit, which...
Yeah, yeah. And vulnerabilities will get patched regardless of what you do, sometimes at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it seems like we both agree that cyber operations are different from espionage. I think you kind of hinted that perhaps some of the Western agencies had inherited the paramount secrecy, perhaps in part from just being around for a long time and inheriting that from human and espionage.
Yeah. So you touched on one thing that I want to bring forward as well, which was when an operation is compromised, you have the problem that the opposition can do a damage assessment and backtrack to see what else might be compromised. And then they know what you know. Which, you know, a lot of the point of espionage is that you know something and they don't know that you know that thing. You know, like mm-hmm. it's not just the secret access and the secret information. It is the fact that you have that secret information that makes it valuable. Otherwise, like if you know their password, that's useful. If yep. they know that you know the password, they're going to change the password.
Yep.
So it ceases to be useful. That the exact same sort of logic. So a lot of there's the access, but there's also the integrity of the information that you've already captured and how useful it will be. So a compromise of secrecy can also sort of retroactively damage what you've done already by revealing that you know it and therefore giving the opposition an opportunity to change.
Yeah, yeah. So another interesting Cold War story, the Venona decrypts. So the Russians were using one-time pads, which are theoretically perfectly secure because you use the key material only once. Except, of course, in this case, they weren't using it only once, and so it wasn't effective. And some clever clogs in NSA, I believe, figured out how to decrypt some of the Russian diplomatic communications. But the Soviets also had moles within US intelligence. And so they knew that Venona had been compromised. And it wasn't until, I think, the late 90s that Venona was declassified. But for 30 or 40 years, the Russians had known that the US had known. The US knew that the Russians knew because they discovered the moles. And it's kind of curious who the secret was being kept from at that point.
Yeah.
The other really interesting thing to talk about is you had an example of how the US and I suppose allies had released intelligence to effect, but that we were talking before about how different countries have different, I don't know if it's risk appetites is the right way to describe it, but have different attitudes to OPSEC. So the example that comes to mind in particular is just the Chinese, who've been very, very noisy, but also very, very prolific. And I've often wondered, is the US approach or the Australian approach or the UK approach, where we're very, very stealthy, the right approach? Are the Chinese making a mistake? Someone once said to me that not caring about OPSEC was a tremendous force multiplier. And if you look at the IP theft that Chinese actors have undertaken over time, they've been tremendously successful.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think this is actually, we're starting to get to the heart of it, which is the focus on secrecy is a sort of espionage heritage. And it's carried over, I think, into the, should we say, the Western way of cyber, where it's espionage 2.0, shall we say, or the espionage .com boom. How about that one? So essentially, they're carrying over the things that have always worked, and they're treating it the same way as they've treated everything else. Whereas I think other countries are also treating it as espionage, but they have different espionage traditions, different ways that espionage helps the state. So I think maybe the Western way is very much a, you know, we inform policymakers so that they can make more informed decisions. I think that might be sort of the Western ideal. Whereas perhaps the Russian view of espionage is sort of, we provide options for policymakers to affect change, you know, as well as to make more informed decisions and so on, or less, I think, informed decisions than just to know what the other guys are doing, maybe. And I think the Chinese approach similarly is not limited to, you know, how can we inform policymakers so that they can have, you know, more informed decision making, but, you know, how could we help our country? What are things that we can do to help our country? And
yeah, it's more holistic in that we've got national goals and we can pursue those national goals directly through cyber operations.
Oh, absolutely. Like those national goals are actually one of the ways that the cyber groups are directed, or at least it was historically. I'm not sure how things are these days, but due to concerns about espionage from the West being able to intercept directions from the political head to the espionage organs, rather than giving directives, you know, like it is now a priority to focus on nanotechnologies, they would instead make them these national directives, and then it would be understood that the espionage units would follow on from this and do the correct thing. And implied, you know, this is your targeting now. This is what you should be focusing on.
Yeah.
You know, so those 5-year plans, which were, you know, like within 5 years, we'll be a world leader in aviation of, you know, fourth generation fighters, nanotechnology, and green wind turbine stuff. That would be fucking directions. That wouldn't be just high theory stuff. That would be marching orders.
Yeah.
And then it would be the job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the Chinese had made in, I think it was 2025, a while ago, and it's quite striking how the strategic industries they identified corresponded to what you would see in APT activity in terms of the industries targeted, so aerospace, advanced metals, biology, yada, yada, yada. So exactly what you've described. So your thesis there is that the espionage culture has kind of flowed through to how careful they are in operation.
Yeah, I think so. We sort of see it with the Russians as well, like the GRU versus the FSB. So like the GRU has always had a reputation of being a little bit more thuggish, a lot more results oriented. Like they're the military, right? You know, like they're very good at achieving something.
Kicking down doors and blowing up stuff.
Yeah, like if they break shit on the way, then shit gets broken. Whereas the KGB was a little bit more subtle, like not massively more subtle, but a little bit more subtle. And we're still seeing that with, you know, the cyber operations that they do to a degree. Like the GRU stuff tends to get caught a lot faster. There's still, you know, like there's SVR operations that we don't know about because they're sort of subtle and clever and we haven't found them yet, that sort of thing. Whereas the GRU, while they might have those, we catch a lot of their stuff, because they don't really care. Like they've achieved what they wanted to achieve. So I think that that like that's I don't think I'm wrong because I can point at exact evidence, but I don't think that that's the entire story.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess the question is, like, let's just accept that it's all culturally and sort of historically based. Then the question I have is any one approach actually better, like objectively? And so if I was going to argue for that, I would say that the US, we'll use it as an example, was tremendously successful at conducting a lot of operations and not getting caught. And then the Snowden disclosures actually showed the costs of getting caught. And it turns out that I think that they're tremendous because there's been a lot of pushback across fronts that don't have anything to do with espionage, like digital, I'll call it digital trade, but exchange with Europe and the EU. And so getting caught has these huge costs, and they were probably right not to get caught. In the case of China, I would say that they've been tremendously tactically successful at stealing IP, but this has come with longer term costs. So that wasn't the sole thing, but it was one of the big factors that led to the sort of Trump administration trade war. That's kind of clearly illegal. They've got other aspects which are to do with gathering IP, but those were, you know, perhaps more arguably you would get benefit. So that'd be the case where I'd say that, okay, different countries have different approaches. And I guess I'm arguing that a lot of secrecy is appropriate.
Yeah, I think you've got a good case to make there. I think we could maybe say that secrecy keeps options open that get closed down without it. So it doesn't necessarily have tangible benefits. Well, okay, it has some, but the costs are not necessarily evident immediately when you lose it. In the case of all of the IP theft, the benefits of not bothering were the ability to scale up, not just by volume of targets, but by volume of operators, because you didn't need a particularly high level of competence, because you weren't like the tradecraft that they were learning was, clicky and, typey this and it wasn't.
Just go for it.
Yeah. Like it was just like, from 0 to 60 in 5 days of, hands-on, and then they were let loose as opposed to like this, much more long drawn out training process. The point is it allowed them to get a huge number of people operating against a huge number of targets and to just vacuum up a huge amount of IP that they were then able to sift through and apply and, help their economy. And I think that there are very clear benefits that they've had from that. But on the other hand, it has caused them significant problems. People don't necessarily see them as a benevolent partner when, there was a leak recently of some internal slides from a game company that was sort of, it was either moving into China.
I think it was.
That's the one. Yeah. And so, for them, part of the concerns that they had was getting hacked by their partners.
Yeah. 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 I think my recollection was it was, we think this is an important market. We fully expect all our IP to be stolen if we enter it. Maybe that's a bit creative paraphrasing, but.
Yeah. Something along those lines. Is that necessarily a good place to be in the long term?
I think from a Chinese point of view, it would be great if Roblox thought it's an important market to be in. We steal all their IP and they don't know about it.
Yeah, and they still want to be in.
I guess having argued that secrecy is important, you sort of came back with it gives you options. And I think that one criticism I would have of Western agencies is until more recently, they've had secrecy by default rather than secrecy as a choice. And I guess I'd levy the opposite criticism on Chinese APTs in that they've had no OPSEC. It seems like, anyway, they've had no OPSEC as default rather than making an active choice. And I think that's probably my guess would be that that'd be historical. My my gut feeling is that they didn't expect that attribution was actually a thing when they started on this journey. And so therefore, if you don't expect attribution can be done, you don't take steps to prevent it.
I think that there's something to be said for that. I think if you have the tradition of secrecy because the entire thing is meant to be a secret process that's used to just inform people and all of that, then everything you do has to be secret by default, because there's no, like, secrecy is not retroactive. It's not a thing that you can go back and be like, okay, you know, everyone forget what you've learned. That didn't happen.
Not Men in Black style. Yep.
Right. You're like, you have to do it on an ongoing proactive basis. And when the directive comes down to, like, go out and steal all the aviation schematics you can, if you don't think, well, we better do this secretly, and you just think we better do this at mass scale, then you can't go back and be like, retroactively, let's just add some security to that. So I think to a degree, part of what happened is that China, initially when they were doing these operations, the cyber operation was very lax, right? Like in 2010, for example, they're just like, there wasn't attribution, right? Like that wasn't a thing that you had to worry about.
Yeah.
So while on the West, we had that secrecy by default inherent in our 2010 operations, in a place where you're encountering this lax operational environment and you want to go sort of, you want to go hard, you can drop secrecy and security and stealth as a requirement because it's just not a problem. Right? It's not a thing you need to worry about because there's no opposition, really. And so you can sort of explode onto the scene like they did. But of course, the problem is when security does show up, now not only have you left all this evidence behind, but also you've sort of trained the wrong habits. And in a way, that sort of, that became what they did, I think. So for example, the KGB approach, when they, like when the KGB would find a lax operational environment, rather than making their security lax and just sort of taking it easy with sloppy operations, they would maintain security and they would just increase the speed, the tempo of their operations and just do more of them. So they would still take advantage of that environment, but rather than reducing their security, they would simply increase the number of operations and the speed of the operations. And I think that that sort of approach is probably the more rational one. It's the safer option when you encounter these things, because if you decrease the tempo and maintain security, you can adjust to an environment when security from the other side increases, you know,
To me, that sounds like your argument is understand the environment and make an appropriate operational choice about how much you invest in it, which I guess I was arguing that many countries have not done. Anyway, thanks a lot for another great chat. Talk to you next week.
Always a good one.